So imagine buying a sprawling piece of real estate. You hold the deed, and the paperwork clearly states you own 10 acres.
Right, 10 full acres sounds great.
Exactly. But when you actually drive out to walk the property line, you realize like 9 of those acres are a sheer vertical cliff face.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so you can't build a house on it.
No, you can't plant a crop on it either. Geometrically, it exists, but practically, I mean, it's completely unusable.
It's a perfect parallel for what happens when we feed raw data into an algorithm. You're paying for 10 dimensions of space, but you really only have one dimension of usable land.
Yeah, just because a data set has 1,000 columns doesn't mean it actually contains 1,000 independent dimensions of information. And that reality is the core of what we are exploring today.
It really is.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. I'm your host, here to help you unpack all this.
And I'm here to help decode the math behind it all.
We have this really fascinating stack of linear algebra notes in front of us today. And our mission is to translate these abstract textbook matrix concepts, things like determinants, rank, orthogonal projections, and traces directly into the why it matters for practical machine learning.
Right, because we often treat machine learning like a black box of code. You call a function, the computer does some hidden math, and out pops a prediction.
Like magic.
Exactly, like magic. But that hidden math is incredibly physical. It
Yeah.
is entirely about stretching, squashing, and rotating high-dimensional space.
So we are bypassing the chalkboard proofs today. We're going straight for the structural mechanics of how data physically behaves for you, the listener, when you're building these models.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Let's start right at the foundation, the determinant.
Yes, the volume dial.
Right. If we view a matrix not as a grid of numbers, but as a machine that transforms space, the determinant acts as the master volume dial for that transformation.
It measures the exact scaling factor of the space. So if you take the simplest possible example, a standard 2D plane.
Just a standard XY graph.
Yep. You can define a basic 1x1 square on that plane using your standard basis vectors, one pointing right, one pointing up. The area of that square is exactly one.
Makes sense.
But when you apply a 2x2 matrix to that space, those vectors get pushed and pulled, the grid stretches or skews, and that original perfect square turns into like a slanted parallelogram.
And the determinant of that 2x2 matrix, which is just calculated as AD minus BC, gives you the exact signed area of that new parallelogram.
Exactly. If your determinant is 5, your matrix machine just stretched the entire 2D space so that every region is now 5 times larger than it was.
Wow. And does that hold up if we go beyond 2D?
Oh, it scales perfectly. If you have a 3x3 matrix, it represents a transformation in 3D space.
Right.
The determinant calculates the volume of the 3D parallel pipe formed by the matrix's column vectors. Now, the math to calculate it gets a bit more recursive here.
Yeah, the notes mention something called a cofactor expansion.
Right. It's a pattern of alternating signs and submatrices where you multiply elements of the first row by the determinants of smaller sections. It gets messy to do by hand,
Sure.
but the physical meaning never changes. For an n by n matrix, the determinant is always the n-dimensional volume.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Right.
Because the critical moment for a data scientist isn't when the volume stretches, it's when it disappears.
Yes, the collapse.
Right. If we go back to that 2D parallelogram, if the two rows are perfectly parallel,
The vectors point in the same direction.
exactly. The parallelogram collapses to a line, meaning the area, and the determinant is exactly zero. Does the math just break at that point?
That collapse is a profound geometric event. When a matrix has a determinant of zero, we call it singular. The transformation has physically squashed your space into a lower dimension.
So a 3D space becomes flat.
Your 3D cube became a flat sheet of paper, or your 2D plane became a line. And once that space is flattened, the volume is gone forever.
Which means the matrix is non-invertible, right?
Yeah.
You can't run the machine in reverse to get your original space back.
Nope. You can't unsquash a pancake back into a sphere. The mathematical information that differentiated the points along that crushed dimension has been permanently destroyed.
Because multiple distinct points in the input got mapped to the exact same overlapping coordinate in the output.
Exactly. So an inverse function wouldn't know which original point to send you back to. It's mathematically impossible.
Right.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is why a singular covariance matrix is such a massive red flag in machine learning.
So if you are calculating the covariance of your data set, and the determinant is zero.
It signals your data actually lives in a lower dimensional subspace than you assumed. some of your features are exact linear combinations of other features.
Like having two sensors in a data set recording the exact same temperature in a house, right? One in Celsius, one in Fahrenheit.
That is the classic intuitive example, yeah.
To the computer, it looks like two separate columns of data. It looks like two dimensions.
But geometrically, one is just a strictly scaled and shifted version of the other. If you plot Celsius against Fahrenheit, you don't get a scatter plot of points covering a 2D area.
You just get a single, perfectly straight line.
Right. The actual volume of the data in that 2D space is zero. The covariance matrix will have a determinant of zero because the true dimensionality of that data is just one.
It's redundant.
Totally redundant.
So if a zero determinant tells us that our space has collapsed due to these redundancies, how do we systematically measure what's actually left? Like with the cliff face property, how do we count the usable land?
That is where matrix rank comes in.
Matrix rank.
Yeah, rank is the true headcount of your surviving dimensions. Formally, it's the maximum number of linearly independent columns a matrix contains.
Okay.
Which, interestingly, is always mathematically identical to the number of linearly independent rows.
So if your data set has 100 columns, but 50 of them are just redundant linear combinations, like the Celsius and Fahrenheit issue?
Your matrix rank is only 50.
Got it. And a square matrix is only invertible if it has full rank, meaning its rank perfectly equals its number of columns and rows. No redundancies.
No collapsed space. This connects directly to a really elegant theorem. The sources highlight the rank nullity theorem.
I remember reading about that. It functions as a strict law of conservation for your dimensions, right?
Exactly. The theorem states that for any matrix with k columns, its rank plus its nullity must equal k.
And nullity is the dimension of the null space.
Think of the null space as the mathematical trash can of your transformation.
The trash can, I like that.
Yeah. It is the specific subspace of vectors that the matrix completely annihilates. It maps them straight to the origin, just to zero.
Wow.
So the rank nullity theorem tells us every single input dimension must be accounted for. Every column direction you feed into the matrix either survives and contributes to the output, which is the rank, or it gets completely crushed to zero, which is the nullity.
So if you have k input dimensions, they don't just vanish into the ether. If k is 100 and your rank is 40, your nullity simply has to be 60.
Precisely. 60 dimensions of your data were structurally redundant and got flattened. In machine learning, knowing the rank of your data matrix prevents you from trying to solve systems that have infinite solutions or no solutions at all.
Now, observing that data collapses is one thing, but in a lot of machine learning workflows, we actually want to weaponize that collapse, don't we?
We do.
We want to intentionally force our scattered high-dimensional data points onto a very specific lower-dimensional flat surface, like for regression tasks.
Yeah, when you want to intentionally project data onto a subspace, you use idempotent matrices.
Idempotent?
Right. By definition, a square matrix M is idempotent if squaring it gives you the exact same matrix back. So M squared equals M.
So applying the transformation twice gives the same result as applying it once. It's like pressing an elevator button that's already lit up.
That is a great way to put it. Pressing it again doesn't change anything. It's the perfect visualization of an orthogonal projection. And these projection matrices are absolutely foundational to statistics. The most ubiquitous example in our sources is the mean deviation matrix.
Also known as the centering matrix.
Exactly.
Let's walk through the math of that one because it's a brilliant piece of engineering. It's defined as the identity matrix I minus the fraction 1 over n multiplied by a matrix of all ones.
Right. And when you take a raw vector of data, say a single feature, across n different samples, and you pre-multiply it by this centering matrix, the math physically drags the entire data set through space until its center of mass sits exactly at the origin.
It instantly centers the data. It transforms every individual raw value into that value minus the overall mean.
And doing this via matrix multiplication rather than like a simple for loop in Python is what allows algorithms to center massive data sets simultaneously. You just hit the data matrix with this idempotent centering matrix and boom, the mean of every single column is zero.
And centering your data isn't just a formatting preference, right? It's a prerequisite.
Oh, absolutely. Principal component analysis, linear regression,
yeah.
ANOVA, the analysis of variance, none of these work correctly if the data isn't centered first. You have to anchor the data to the origin to accurately measure how it varies.
Now, because the mean deviation matrix is symmetric and idempotent, the sources point out a fascinating algebraic quirk. its eigenvalues are always exactly 0 or 1.
Yeah, the mechanism behind that is actually quite simple if you follow the logic. If a matrix M is idempotent, M squared equals M.
Right.
And if we think about what an eigenvalue is, it's the scalar multiplier, lambda, that represents how much a specific vector stretches when the matrix is applied to it.
Okay, I'm with you.
So if M times a vector equals lambda times that vector, then applying M twice M squared would stretch it by lambda squared.
But since M squared is exactly the same as M, then lambda squared must equal lambda.
Exactly. And algebraically, what are the only two numbers where squaring the number gives you the exact same number back?
0 and 1.
Right. Geometrically, this makes total sense. If you're projecting data onto a plane, the vectors that already live flat on that plane don't get changed at all. They're multiplied by 1, they survive.
And the others.
The vectors pointing perfectly perpendicular to the plane get completely crushed down to the origin. They are multiplied by 0. Annihilated.
Which leads to another beautiful mathematical shortcut. Because the only eigenvalues are 1s and 0s, the rank of an idempotent matrix, the count of its surviving dimensions, is perfectly equal to its trace.
And that transition brings us to the final and arguably most powerful computational tool in this deep dive, the trace.
The trace. It sounds so simple. It's defined just as the sum of the elements running down a square matrix's main diagonal, top left to bottom right.
That's it, just basic addition.
And magically, that simple sum of the diagonal elements is always equal to the sum of all the matrix's eigenvalues. Plus, it has this additive property, right? The trace of A plus B is the trace of A plus the trace of B.
Yep. It seems almost too simple to be useful, especially after discussing n-dimensional volume scaling and orthogonal projections. But the trace is the linchpin of optimization in machine learning.
Why is that?
Because of one specific behavioral quirk, its cyclic property.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The rule is that the trace of matrix A times matrix B is identical to the trace of matrix B times matrix A.
Which breaks the standard intuition of linear algebra. In matrix multiplication, order strictly matters. Matrix A times matrix B produces a totally different geometric transformation than B times A. You cannot just swap them.
Right, AB does not equal BA. But while the resulting matrices are completely different, their traces remain identical. The sum of the main diagonal is preserved.
Exactly.
And this works for long chains of matrices too, doesn't it?
It does. The trace of A times B times C is equal to the trace of C times A times B. You can take the matrix at the end of the chain and cycle it to the front over and over without changing the trace.
So how does cycling matrices around an equation actually help you build a better neural network?
It solves the calculus nightmare of optimization. When you are training a model, you are trying to minimize the error. The loss function very often involves a quadratic form.
And a quadratic form looks like a vector transposed multiplied by a matrix multiplied by the original vector, something like X transpose times A times X.
Right. Taking the derivative of that tangled web of variables to find the gradient to update your model's weights is incredibly tedious. You're dealing with massive tensorial equations. Isolating the specific variable you want to take the derivative with respect to is computationally exhausting.
But a quadratic form, by definition, always evaluates to a scalar, right? A single one-by-one number.
Exactly. And what is the trace of a single number?
Well, it's just the number itself. The diagonal of a one-by-one matrix is just its only element.
You got it. So you can take your entire messy quadratic loss function, X transpose times A times X, and simply wrap the whole thing inside a trace function. You haven't changed the value of the equation at all.
But now that it is inside the trace, the cyclic property activates. You can legally rearrange the order of the matrices.
Yes. You can cycle the X vector from the end of the equation to the front. You can group terms together to isolate the exact weight matrix you were trying to optimize. It allows you to mathematically untangle the variables.
That's incredible.
By rotating the matrices inside the trace until the variable you care about is isolated on the end, applying matrix calculus rules becomes almost identical to basic scalar calculus.
You don't have to compute an exploding web of partial derivatives.
You just cycle the terms, isolate the variable, and take the gradient. This matrix derivative identity is the cheat code that makes training complex models computationally feasible.
Wow.
Without the trace isolating these variables, calculating the backpropagation gradients for massive matrices would bring our processors to a grinding halt.
It really reframes the entire process of training a model. I mean, let's pull all of this together for the listener.
Let's do it.
We started by looking at how data has a physical shape. The determinant is our n-dimensional volume dial. If it drops to 0, it means our data set has redundancies that have physically collapsed our space.
Right. And when that space collapses, Matrix rank acts as our true ledger. It counts the actual linearly independent dimensions that survived the squash.
While the rank nullity theorem accounts for the dimensions we lost to the null space.
Exactly. Then we looked at how we can control that geometry using idempotent matrices, applying transformations like the mean deviation matrix that project and center our data.
So algorithms like PCA and ANOVIA have a standardized origin to work from.
Yep.
And finally, we saw how the trace, just a surprisingly simple sum of the diagonal, leverages its cyclic property to let us safely rearrange massive quadratic equations. It gives us the algebraic leverage to actually compute the gradients needed to optimize these models.
Every time you run a fit command to train an algorithm, this is the invisible geometric ballet happening in the background. Spaces are being measured, collapsed, projected, and cycled.
It's just wild to think about it physically like that.
It really is. And, you know, this raises an important question, especially about the current state of artificial intelligence.
Oh, where are you going with this?
Well, we have talked extensively today about how a singular matrix, a determinant of zero, reveals that seemingly complex data is actually just redundant information living in a collapsed space.
Right, like the Celsius and Fahrenheit sensors. Two columns of data, but really only one actual dimension of temperature.
Exactly. Now apply that geometric lens to the massive large language models being built today. We are feeding them data sets with trillions of parameters.
Trillions! It's unfathomable.
And the current industry philosophy is that higher dimensional space inherently captures more complex intelligence. But based on the linear algebra we just walked through, we have to ask how much of that colossal parameter space is actually full rank.
Oh, wow. Are these models genuinely mapping trillions of independent dimensions of human knowledge?
Or is a massive percentage of that supposedly high-dimensional architecture just empty mathematical real estate?
The cliff face from our real estate analogy.
Exactly. If we could calculate the true rank of these massive internet data sets, we might find that the vast majority of it sits in the null space, just waiting to be crushed by a determinant. We might just be recording the exact same conceptual temperatures in a billion different redundant variations.
That is a staggering thought to end on. It really makes you wonder how much of the black box is just empty space. Thank you for walking us through this today. And to you listening, next time you are training a model, just remember the geometry running under the hood. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.